Hello, my name is Charlie Moores, and in the following interview, you'll hear from Luke Steele, Executive Director of Wild Moors. We're discussing grouse moors and grouse moor fires, re-wetting our peatlands, support from government and MPs for moving from a partial ban on burning to a full ban, COP26 of course, NGOs working together, and a new reporting scheme whereby we can all contribute data that will prove just how many fires the shooting industry are setting on the UK's largest carbon stores. I began though by asking Luke, with a new so-called burning season just underway, whether grouse estates were taking any notice at all of climate change concerns or the partial ban on heather burning that came into force on the 12th of June this year.
No, and let's get down to the nitty-gritty of the reason why. Grouse shooting estates need to set fire to the heather to produce that younger, more nutritious heather for the grouse to eat, which then increases the grouse numbers, so there is more to be shot for sport. It has been a very poor season with very few grouse that have bred. And this is the last moment of survival for the shooting industry. This industry is on its knees because the grouse aren't breeding as a result of climate change. And the attempt to force the numbers up, the grouse shooting estates are going all out there to set the heather on fire, burn more, trap more, snare more, kill more, so that there can be a next shooting season. This isn't about protecting the environment. This is about survival for an age-old industry that cannot fit in the modern climate.
It is deeply ironic that grouse populations are down because of climate change, and yet the grouse industry continues to set. I mean, it's literally hundreds of fires already this year, isn't it?
Yeah, this is over 100 fires within the space of 4 days since the first fires were lit of the season. On the UK's largest natural carbon store, it is deeply ironic and a vicious circle that we're setting our carbon store ablaze, which is fueling climate change. And it's climate change that is causing the red grouse to not be able to breed. They need straight down the middle. They need the right climate, a little bit warm sometimes and a little bit cold sometimes. And when the weather goes to the extremes, when we see downpours of rain, hot blazing weather, and very little in between, these birds do not breed. And on top of that, we see that the burden of parasites and disease amongst the grouse population is rocketing right up to the extent that they need non-therapeutic use of medicated grit. In the same way we see in factory farms that animals are given antibiotics to keep them alive in the most desperate and dire of situations. This is exactly what's happening on Britain's grouse moors because the populations are so dense that there's outbreaks of disease and parasites. This is landscape-scale farming of red grouse for shooting, and this needs to stop on the UK's largest carbon store.
I was just going to say exactly that, Luke. I often use the phrase that it's grouse farming. There are huge numbers in areas where there really shouldn't be that many birds at all.
Absolutely, and this is about farming, the controlling of an environment, the burning of the heather, the use of medicated grit, the killing off of natural predators, from foxes through to hen harriers, so that these species not only survive, but their numbers go up to 100 times the natural density. This is rearing birds for shooting. This is rearing birds to kill them for entertainment in the biggest bags that can be available. And this is right at the heart of the shooting industry. It cannot be financially viable without this intensification. And that's why we see so many moors going up ablaze this season, because it's the last stand for the shooting industry.
Just a quick question on where the fires are actually being set, because last year, Yorkshire Water, United Utilities, the National Trust banned burning on 34 sections of moorland, which spanned Yorkshire, Lancashire and Derbyshire. And I assume none of the current burning has been taking place on that land.
No, there's been no burning on any of the corporate landowner land at all, which is a huge success.
Because
when we look at the size of some of the estates that are owned, United Utilities, for example, is England's largest corporate landowner. The National Trust owns a huge section of the Peak District National Park, and Yorkshire Water are the second biggest landowner in Yorkshire. We've kept these peatlands safe from burning. There's still work that needs to be done there. We still need to restore them. We still need to rewild these spaces. But for the moment, there's no burning happening there, and there won't be in the future. Now we need to move forward and stop the grouse shooting and the other harmful practices that are there too.
I described it in the intro, Luke, as a partial ban. And there are loopholes, aren't there, which is why these fires are still able to be set. Can you explain what they are?
So there are loopholes for where a grouse shooting estate tries to argue that the fire is can be used to prevent wildfires. But this is just a ruse. This is just a smokescreen. And at the end of the day, the science says the most effective way to stop wildfires is to re-wet peatland habitat so that fires can't break out. Because if you imagine, if you had a full sink and you threw a match into that full sink, the match and the fire would extinguish. It's the same with our peatlands. We see that when they're re-wetted, they are effective fire barriers because the moment that a flame hits them, it gets extinguished. And we have real-life situations that show this as well. Saddleworth Moor, for example, the biggest wildfire, certainly my lifetime, started on a grouse shooting moor where burning had been performed, had dried out the peatland. It was literally a tinderbox and went up in flames because somebody being stupid, either with a barbecue or whatever up there. Now, it burnt for 3 days on the grouse moor. It then hit the re-wetted peat bogs on the neighbouring conservation moor, and it was out. That was an effective fire barrier. Now, imagine if that grouse moor hadn't been burnt, hadn't been drained, and was re-wetted. There's a good chance that that fire wouldn't have got out of hand in the way it did, or perhaps even it wouldn't have got out of hand at all.
Yeah.
We need to see this across our uplands as a whole. We need to see them re-wetted. We need to see the peatlands restored so that they're effective fire barriers. And the grouse shooting industry turned around and going, oh, wildfires will happen if we don't burn the heather. It's just a ruse. The only thing they care about is burning the heather to deliver that food for the grouse to drive their numbers up. They don't care about wildfires at all. Let's be realistic.
Yeah. Can you explain the difference between shallow peat and deep peat? That's one of the exemptions or loopholes that I was asking about.
In practical terms, not a lot. Both are very important for storing carbon. Both are very important for stopping the water running down into communities by holding it back on the moor. And again, both are very important for stopping wildfires. Now, the only real difference is that the shallow peat is more degraded than the deep peat. Only 4% of Britain's upland peat overall is in a healthy condition. That includes blanket bog and shallow peat. But realistically, we need to protect the shallow peat as well. We need to restore that to its healthier, deeper state so that we have peatlands across the uplands as a whole that are healthy, that are functioning. For wildlife, for species like dunlin, for example, that we see are going down and declining in numbers at the moment. And part of this is because the blanket bogs are in such poor condition in the uplands. And we know that climate change is going to put more pressures on there. It's going to bring hotter summers, which will bring more wildfires. We also know it's going to bring wetter winters, which increases the flood risk too. Rewetting our peatlands is a win-win situation. It wins for nature, it wins for communities, and it wins for our climate. So let's go on and get it done.
Yeah. Wild Moors is calling on the government to introduce an immediate and complete ban on the burning of peatland. How much support are you getting from MPs and the government?
A lot. The simple fact is the government recognises this needs to happen. And it's not going to be a case of if it happens, it's going to be a case of when it happens. The Climate Change Committee has made clear a recommendation that we need an immediate and complete ban on burning on our peatlands to protect and help restore them. And that we have to restore every last peatland to stop climate change. That is quite a clear recommendation from the Climate Change Committee. We see that the grouse shooting industry are setting more and more fires on these shallow peatlands. That's increased by fivefold this season. This can only head in one direction. The grouse shooting industry know quite clear that peatland burning is going to be ended. This is the 21st century, for God's sake. You know, we're setting fire to peatlands for grouse shooting.
The industry is fighting back, isn't it? Trying to halt any further bans on peatland fires.
Oh, of course, because they know they're essential for driving grouse numbers up. I mean, that's all this is about. You know, when the grouse aren't breeding because of climate change, what have they got left to do? Burn more, trap more, kill more, so that those grouse numbers, they hope, will drive up. Now, we'll be there to stop that from happening, and we'll be there to hold them to account and make sure the laws are boosted to protect the environment, to protect wildlife. This, you know, this is an industry that's on its knees. It's not fit for the 21st century. And I think the worst thing about it all is that they're stringing on these declining rural communities. They're giving them this illusion, pretending that it's an industry that's booming. It's not. It's utter bollocks. There's no grouse there to shoot. We need to move on. We see that rewilding projects, for example, are bringing in jobs, boosting employment in rural areas. You know, these areas, we have to admit, have been left behind. You know, there's no denying that. And what we need to create is an uplands that's fit for the future. That includes rewilding them, delivering those jobs, delivering for the environment, delivering for wider communities, the communities that rely on the health of these uplands and the upland peat so they don't get flooded, for example.
Yeah.
And that's not what's done with grouse shooting. Grouse shooting focuses and hones in on one thing, red grouse to be shot, at the exclusion of absolutely everything else.
It does sound so ridiculous when you actually look at what the industry, and it is an industry, people question whether it's an industry. It really is an industry. It's entirely built around making money from killing birds on our uplands. It's so out of step with everything else.
It is. It's the 21st century. We know that the climate is changing. We know we've got to stop climate change. We know we've got to make our communities more resilient. We know we've got to sort out the problem of rural unemployment, that we've got to sort out the biodiversity decline. And here's a win-win situation. Let's rewild these spaces. The other thing we've got to understand is that what we need is a large number of people getting behind this. Now, we've got some wonderful projects going on, places like Langholm, for example.
Yeah.
But we need to take these further afield. They're great. They're fantastic for showing what can be achieved. But we need this on a landscape scale. And we need hundreds of landowners to get behind this now. And it's starting to happen. Standard Life, for example, bought out grouse more recently following off the back of what BrewDog did.
Yeah.
For the reason of storing their carbon in those habitats through regenerating it. That provides for nature. It's providing a boost in employment in all the various services that are needed to restore those habitats. It benefits wider communities as well, with things like the flood mitigation, of course, making communities more resilient to climate change too.
Yeah, yeah.
So many people are shocked that this is still going on in the 21st century, let alone in the middle of a climate emergency where everybody's saying, guys, we've got to reach net zero. We've got to store that carbon away in every way we can to stop climate change.
COP26 is taking place next month, of course, up in Glasgow. Do you think peat and moorland burning will be discussed there? Have you any indications?
I believe that the government recognises this as an issue. I believe that the government will act on it. And it's a case of when it stops rather than if it stops. I think at COP26, there's a very long string of good burning days there. And if the grouse shooting industry were to take advantage of that by setting fires whilst we've got all these global leaders flocking to the country to talk about climate change, they'd just make an absolute arse of themselves.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But I mean, looking at the way this industry operates, it focuses on grouse and grouse only. It's fighting for survival. It's had three poor seasons. We've got people attending shoots, questioning it, you know, whether it's going to continue. It's falling apart. If I was in the government, I'd just say, let's focus on the future, focus on future economies and sort out the environment whilst we're at it.
Yeah.
So let's get it done, preferably before COP. If not, we'll, of course, be watching to see if the grouse moors take advantage of that long period.
And making sure pictures go in the media if they do.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Talking of the government, you are very fortunate, aren't you, to have Olivia Blake, MP for Sheffield Hallam. She's doing some really good work on the grouse moors, and she's also species champion for the hen harrier in Parliament.
She is. Olivia's absolutely great. And the thing is, she's an MP with grouse moors in her constituency, as well as being within a community that cares very deeply about the environment. And Olivia's doing fantastic work, holding the government to account, calling out the fires that are taking place and saying, what are we doing here? This is the 21st century. We're setting fire to our peatlands. We see the Climate Change Committee taking notice and saying, look, let's get on with this and restore our peatlands to lock away as much carbon as we potentially can.
What's stopping it from happening, Luke? The will is there. Most of us recognise that it needs to happen. What's the sticking point?
Problem is that there aren't enough moors coming on to the market for all that demand that's there. And that's something that I think that's the big issue that really needs to get sorted out. Ultimately, we need to free up that land. We need to unlock it because there's a lot of companies want to invest in it. There's a lot of people clinging on to it. I don't judge people based on whether they're aristocrats, whether they're corporate landowners, whether they're communities. We've got to look at outcomes here. We've got to say if somebody's doing something good for the environment, that's got to be welcomed. And we've got to work within the framework of the climate emergency, the biodiversity crisis. We've got 10 years to sort this issue out. The government needs to step in. It needs to broker. It needs to talk closer to some of the landowners who are clinging on and say, guys, this is the direction of travel. Everybody else is going there. Why aren't you? There's plenty of companies out there that happily buy grouse and also pick them onto the market. There's very little grouse shooting happening. What's the point of clinging on to that? The land value is going up for restoration projects and going down for grouse shooting. That's a very clear statement from the property industry of where this is going. If you don't want to cling on to that land, sell up, that's great. But by the same token, there's companies that will happily work with you as well in partnership, so long as you don't burn those peatlands, so long as you protect the biodiversity. And that's the one thing that's asked. Restore the land, lock the carbon in it, boost the biodiversity, rewild it, and you can work in partnership with companies. Continue burning the peatlands for grouse shooting. Continue killing off the foxes, the stoats, the weasels, the hen herons, see the biodiversity decline. Your land value is going to go down. Simple as that. There's an economic case here, as well as the moral case and the scientific case.
Yeah, that's a really interesting analysis, Luke. That is the way the private sector seems to be moving. And I get the impression, too, that conservation has finally reached a consensus that everyone in conservation is largely heading in the same direction now. Is that how you feel from the inside?
I think there's consensus across the board that the grouse shooting industry is wrong. People look at it and see us burning our peatlands. And I've said this an awful lot, but it's the truest statement there is. People look at it and see us burning our peatlands in the 21st century, in the midst of a climate emergency, seeing our carbon store, our biggest natural carbon store, going up in smoke. And there's very few people that would be prepared to defend that. There's a lot of people who are prepared to speak out and say this shouldn't be happening. Whether that's people in government, whether that's people in environmental NGOs, whether that's local communities who are impacted by the flooding, and of course the wildfires that come as a result of damaged peatlands. Everybody pretty much is saying the same thing. This needs to stop. We need to restore these habitats. And I think it's great that more environmental NGOs, you know, we see the Wildlife Trust, we see the RSPB speaking out against peatland burning, for example. And we see local communities speaking out about it. We see the community in Sheffield, for example, who had the smoke pouring down into their community, choking them up, damaging the air quality, speaking out against this. It's happening across the board from local communities right up to big NGOs and government nationally and even internationally has started.
I suppose what I was asking, Luke, is you and I have both been around conservation for quite a long time, and conservation groups have tended to work in silos. But I do feel on this issue in particular that they're not only saying the same things, they're actually beginning to work together. I mean, I think Wild Moors has been very, I'm trying to give Wild Moors some credit here. You've been very instrumental in trying to get groups to work together. That, to me, feels like, you know, aside from the arguments about climate change, that seems to me the big advancement in this whole debate.
I think the climate emergency, the fact that we've got all these alarm bells ringing around us, I think focuses people's minds quite a lot.
Right.
At the end of the day, organisations have a lot in common. We all want to protect the environment. We all want to protect wildlife and nature, and we all want to deliver for those communities that rely on that. There's a lot of places where organizations are starting to work together. There's a lot of places where organizations are starting to talk more strategically about it. And if we want to stop this, we've got to work together, we've got to focus, we've got to get the results, and we've got to change things. And diversity within that, diversity of organizations, diversity of people, diversity of backgrounds, really helps there. You can't be a siloed in the modern age and want to achieve change.
I agree.
We criticize the grouse shooting industry a lot for being in the past, and those criticisms are right. But also, I think it's important to look at where we can learn to, as environmental NGOs, as animal protection NGOs, as rewilding NGOs that bring together the two. We can't deliver change unless we're diverse. We can't deliver change unless we're thinking about the most effective way we can deliver that change. And that comes with sitting down, looking at things and saying, this is the way forward. This is the diversity of people, of backgrounds, of organisations that bring that together and forge it into one movement going forward to tackle these issues.
When you said there, we need to look at the grouse shooting industry, that's always seemed to me that a very important contrast, really, is the grouse shooting industry speaks with one voice and with one aim and have done for a very long time, which is why their message about glorious 12th, traditional jobs for the countryside have had such resonance, because it's come from an organised group that are speaking with one voice. Whereas conservation hasn't done that in the past. We seem to have been split along certain lines. But this seems to be the big change. I think it's really important to sort of to stress that everybody now is saying, yes, climate change, biodiversity loss, and it is simply not fit for the 21st century. And from an outside point of view, because I'm not heavily involved in this, of course not, but I see organisations like yours talking with other groups, and the message seems more unified than it's ever been before, which is a great cause for optimism for people like me.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's an awful lot to be optimistic about. I think it's healthy for organisations to talk about things, find that glue together and learn from each other. And I think that's really what the environmental movement is starting to do. And I think it's what the animal protection movement is starting to do as well. There's a lot of organisations and individuals saying, how can I achieve the maximum amount of change possible here? And that comes from learning from each other. And it comes from learning not only from each other, but outside our movement as well. One example of how far organisations have driven this up the policy agenda, we only have to look at the Conservative Party conference, that the government is recognising it can't ignore these issues. In fact, it wants to be part of that. Keep saying what needs to be done. Let's focus on the big picture. Let's get this done. Let's shut down this industry and rewild the uplands.
Yeah, indeed. Let's get this industry shut down as soon as possible. Talking of which, literally anyone can help now, because you've created an online report form to help map where and when grouse moor fires are taking place. I had a look at it just before we started talking. It is very easy to fill in. We'll give the link to that form in the show notes, of course. And as you mentioned earlier, if estate owners continue to set fires during COP, it's going to be a huge own goal. So it's really important that if anyone sees a fire, they report it. You know, that's whether via the form or on social media, because that data is hugely useful to all the groups fighting this industry.
Absolutely. And it's clear we need to fight this with data. We need to show the government the scale of what's going on here. It's not just one or two burns happening here or there. You know, we're literally talking about 100 plus over 4 days since the first fire of the season was lit. This comes from people seeing burning taking place and registering that, so we can then go forward and present this data to policymakers to show the scale of what's happening. So if people would like to get involved with that, if you spot a burn, there's three simple things you can do. Jot down the location, jot down a grid reference, and report it to us. Go onto wildmoors.org.uk or go onto one of our social media pages and just drop us a message. Say, I've seen a burn on this date in this location. Here's the grid reference. And then we can then go about verifying that ourselves and then presenting the data to policymakers. So please get involved. If you see a burn, jot down the location, jot down a grid reference, and report it to us.
Looking ahead slightly, Luke, what are you and Wild Moors going to do when you win this one?
Have a bloody good holiday.
Yeah, well deserved. Well deserved it will be.
Yeah, there is always issues surrounding pheasant shooting, isn't there? You know, there are wider issues out there to do with wildlife and land use and things. And when we look at a lot of these issues, there is a huge intersection there, isn't there, between things that damage the environment and things that damage wildlife we see, you know, all these reports going up about, for example, the damage that industrial farming is doing. That's another animal protection issue that's harming the environment overall. There's a huge intersection there. That's one of the values of working together. I think for us, we'll address that when it comes.
Yeah, of course.
We might have a holiday. We might move on to something else. Let's do that.
Luke, thank you very much. It's been so interesting talking to you over the months. Well, it's over the years now, actually, isn't it? And seeing how these changes are being forced on what seemed once like a pretty invulnerable industry. And, you know, I don't like talking about an opportunity where climate change is concerned because it is so damn serious. But there is an opportunity here to get rid of this vile industry once and for all. And let's never forget what this industry is all about. It is selling wild birds to shoot for fun.
Absolutely. And I think you're right to say, you know, it's not only a threat, it's an opportunity. It's a threat because of what we've done to the environment and to wildlife. It's an opportunity because we can change that and go to a better place with the environment and for nature and for communities. So let's take that opportunity and make sure we have that better future that supports and works for nature, wildlife, and for communities.
Luke, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks, Charlie. Keep up the good work.
Luke Steele, Executive Director of Wild Moors, talking with me in October 2021. If you'd like to support or learn more about Wild Moors, please go to wildmoors.org.uk. Thank you very much indeed for listening. Off the Leash Podcasts is on Twitter at OTL Podcasts and on Instagram at OTL Pods. You can leave us a message there or at offtheleashpodcasts.co.uk. And if you'd like to hear more powerful audio supporting animal rights and the environment, we are on all major streaming platforms. Just look for Off the Leash Podcasts and subscribe for free.